thrilled to welcome today's guest. Couldn't have a more timely guest. I haven't spoken to him in a long time. Rabbi Shmuley Botech is probably the most well-known rabbi in the world, if not one of the. The Washington Post has referred to him as the most famous rabbi in America. Newsweek named him one of the 10 most influential rabbis in the United States, and the Jerusalem Post named him one of the 50 most influential Jews in the world. And there are a lot of influential Jews in the world. He's the author of, I think, 31 books, among them The Israel War, Fighting Back the Jewish State from Campus to Street Corner, Kosher Hate, How to Fight Jew Hatred, Racism, and Bigotry. And thanks for being here. Very, very, very nice to talk to you again.
Great to speak to you, Donnie. Why did you omit 9 times in a row People Magazine's Sexiest Man Alive?
You know, I didn't want to scare off the audience. You know, I mean, they get intimidated.
I don't want to emasculate the men. Agreed.
You have kind of at the epicenter of what I'll call where Judaism meets media. How did that all happen? I mean, you've had talk shows, you've had reality shows, you write op-eds, you've had serious radio shows, you are a guest on just about every show, you've written all these books. How did kind of what I'll call the Shmuley media juggernaut come to be?
Well, you know, there's two things that Jews suck at. So often people say we Jews control the world. I wish. The banking, God give me a share of that too. But the two things that we truly suck at, amidst being great at education, philanthropy, family, community, we suck at sports amidst this body. So maybe
I know the next thing you're going to say, public relations or
that energy. Is absolutely right. And that's why I was so excited to speak to you, because you're a Jew who is a master. You're a black belt at public relations. So let me tell you how bad we are at public relations. 2,000 years ago, they said that we killed God. Now, if you can't respond effectively to being accused of killing God, God is all powerful. God can't die. He's infinite. We couldn't even respond to that. So, and then we were slaughtered for killing Jesus. Then 1,000 years later, they said, you know, you Jews are kind of like vampires. You love blood. You mix it into your masa. And we couldn't respond to, you know, where are my fangs? It's middle of the day. I'm not, you know, speaking to you out of a coffin. We couldn't respond to that either. Then they came and said, oh, and you also poisoned all the wells of Europe and you created the bubonic plague, the Black Death. You killed 1/3 of Europe's populations. All the Jews had to say is, we drink the same water. And there aren't enough of us to kind of like poison all the wells of Europe. There's like 3 Jews in the whole world. We suck at public relations. So from the earliest age, I became the rabbi at Oxford University when I just turned 22 years old. And I was at a world famous university, which is the crossroads of the world of global academia. And I decided that as important as my Torah message, as important as my values message, my PR message was going to be as important, that I wanted to be, just like the prophet Isaiah said, a global light to the nations, or, you know, in Hebrew, or goyim nesaticha, the Jewish light to the nations. So that's where I really began to focus on media, media, media. And I have to tell you, a lot of Jews have shied away from the media because we think it's a superficial message. We think, oh, the Talmud, now that's deep. Paying for a library, that's deep. But PR, that's just for a bunch of losers who like want to kiss after the Super Bowl. Sorry, Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift, I didn't mean that. But, you know, that's just for superficial people. It's not true. There is no such thing as being effective at anything in life unless you master messaging. And the strange thing about it, Donnie, is that our mandate as a people, our biblical mandate, is to be a light to the nations, and we suck at it. So I wanted to change that.
Yeah. What I want to get right into current events, and I've got a bunch of questions. Why, I want to hear from your point of view, why, what shook everybody October 7th beyond the atrocity of it was the reaction to the atrocity around the world. Instead of people galvanizing behind Jews, immediately Israel and Jews were kind of put on trial. Like, you know, why are you responding this way? And there was a but. Yes, they're doing this, but there's no other but. You couldn't have 1,400 people of any other group slaughtered savagely, and then Jews all of a sudden being a target. Why is that? Why does the world continually throughout time hold Jews to grade them on a different curve than every other group?
Well, there's two answers to that. One is a theological answer. I'm not going to bore your audience. I'll be very succinct. The first answer, of course, is why is there anti-Semitism? Because all of this is a product of anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is here for one reason. God made the Jews the conscience of the world. It doesn't mean we're better than anyone. It means he entrusted us with these laws, the Ten Commandments. You know, you're not getting along with your wife. That doesn't mean you can sleep with your secretary. You can get divorced, but you can't, no adultery. And because you think that the government, you know, like, takes too much of your money, it doesn't mean you can rip off the government with your taxes. Do not steal, et cetera, et cetera. No one wanted to hear that message. It's not a popular message. So the reaction was kill the messenger. If we kill the Jews, and then we, not only do we kill the messenger, and if we can defame the Jews as well and libel them as, you're talking about the Nazis, you Jews, you are Nazis. You're talking about the Gestapo, you are the Gestapo. You're guilty of genocide, according to South Africa. Then no one will be held to any standard because there's no standard bearer. We Jews are the standard bearer of a certain message that the world doesn't like to hear.
But isn't part of the problem when you and I understand the point you're making, but when you say out loud, the Jews, God has chosen the Jews as the conscience of all, doesn't that automatically set up Jews in a defensive position? Is there a better way to say that? Because you hear that and you're not Jewish and you go, what? Excuse me?
Like screw you. Who made you guys?
Yeah.
You know, my friend Dennis Prager always says that it's funny. So many peoples, nations consider to, you know, claim to be chosen, but nobody takes it seriously. Like Britain rules the waves. Nobody took that seriously. Japan, their actual flag is a rising sun because the sun rises for them. No one took that seriously. Everyone claims to be chosen. The only nation whom the world took it seriously from were the Jews, because they kind of said, you know, there may be really something to this. So we don't want to be chosen. If you ask me, let someone else be chosen. Yeah. Chosenness sucks. Chosenness means you're chosen to be burned at the stake, beheaded. Jewish women, you know, August 7th, shot in their vaginas, having their breasts cut off, according to the New York Times, and terrorists playing with their breasts. I'm sorry to visualize these horrors.
You have to. Chosenness sucks.
I'm not saying, and chosenness doesn't mean elitism. I never said we're better. I said we are chosen to propagate a message. I used to watch your TV show, national TV all the time. You were propagating a message. It didn't mean that you thought you were better than anyone. It means that you were communicating a message. I never said we're better. I do not believe that Jews are going to heaven and other nations are not, which is what Christians believe. I don't believe that Jews are damned, Muslims are damned to hell if they don't believe in Moses, the way my Muslim brothers and sisters believe that if I don't accept the prophecy of Muhammad. We don't believe we're better. We simply believe that we have this strange mission that God gave us at Mount Sinai. The Ten Commandments are the single most influential code the world has ever received. Nobody denies it. Hindus don't deny it. Buddhists don't deny it. Muslims. And everyone agrees that it was given to the Jews. All I'm saying is nobody wants a conscience. Everybody kills their conscience. If a woman is going to cheat on her husband at some, you know, convention, the first thing she's going to do is get plastered with alcohol because she doesn't want to feel bad about it. She's going to obliterate her conscience. That's what we do. And the Jews, unfortunately, for some reason, God made us the conscience of the world. Now, does that mean we're better? No. It does mean that I think we've acted better. Jews have never been guilty of genocide. Look at after the Holocaust. We Jews, you know, our Palestinian brothers and sisters go and blow up buses and they say, you know, you give us no choice because you have military blockades, because you persecute us. There was no worse persecution than gassing 10,000 Jews a day as they were during the Second World War. Did you see Jews blowing up German nurseries? Did you see Jews blowing up German buses? We've never behaved with that kind of atrocity. And that's why they want to falsely accuse Israel of doing so. Because if the Arab dictators who surround Israel, who do murder their people every single day, who do run kleptocracies where they're all billionaires, all the leaders of Hamas live in Doha. So if you can say the Jews are full of shit, then we don't have to use them as a standard in the Middle East anymore, then we Arab dictators can continue to slaughter people for criticizing us in a newspaper editorial, and there are no repercussions.
Speaking of messaging, I've been one of the few in the media very outspoken on behalf of Jews against anti-Semitism for Israel. There's been a stunning, and you've talked about this, a stunning silence by business leaders, media leaders. We know where academic leaders are. And I think that was particularly frightening to people. In the case of media people, or the case of business people, is because they're so afraid that by coming out and merely saying there was a tremendous atrocity against Jews, that somehow you're demeaning Palestinians and you're going to lose young voters because all the woke people in the world who see it as oppressed and oppressor. Explain to me the bizarre silence.
Okay, well, can we begin with celebrities, if you don't mind?
Yes, because, well, that's, I'm including, that's what I'm including that.
Right, yeah. I mean, you revolve in celebrity circles. So let's first talk about the influencers who shape our culture. They're the biggest cowards of all. Who is a celebrity? A celebrity is someone who, even more, a politician needs to win 51% of the vote. A celebrity needs 80% of the population, you know, to sell an album, to stay on TV, or they're cut. If you're on Disney or something and you're only getting 50% market share, they're gonna cut you. Celebrities are the biggest cowards in the world. I was Michael Jackson's rabbi and for 2 years, tried to save his life, ultimately failed, he died tragically. But what we used to discuss all the time was how I said, Michael, you became the most famous man maybe that ever lived. Don't you think you're supposed to leverage that for some kind of purpose more than just selling albums, which is a nice thing? And that's what we talked about. Celebrities rarely think about that. They're cowards. They're afraid of losing their yes. their public. Now, why do you lose your public specifically if you defend the Jews? You know, George Floyd was murdered by the police and everyone came out for him. Simple. Because yeah. we Jews have stupidly allowed ourselves to be portrayed as a privileged white minority and majority, that Jews are bankers, billionaires, that every Jew is a Bill
Ackman, what do you mean we've allowed ourselves?
Because it's a lie. You know, when people
we
say
know
to
it's
me,
a lie. We know it's a lie. By the way, it's the worst. Anti-Semitism is the worst because on the one hand, they're calling you vermin, lower than humanity, scum. On the other hand, oh, but we control the banks and the media and whatnot, so we're holier than thou. So it's anti-Semitism. Noah Tishby said that. I thought it was fantastic. From above and below. And so why will you say we allow that? How did we allow that?
We allowed it because we never believed in responding forcefully. You know, so why did you suck at PR, to come back to our first point? They suck at PR not because they're stupid, but because they don't think it's worth it. They don't think anyone's going to believe the lies. If there's one thing we've learned about the Jews, there is no lie that will be told that will not be believed about the Jews. And we still stupidly don't get it. Unfortunately, so many Jewish celebrities are cowards. They are much more interested in the approval of their Hollywood, drinking buddies and of award ceremonies, and the public. Where, you know, even Steven Spielberg, who's a great man, who made the greatest, most important Holocaust film of all time, Schindler's List. Where is he on October 7th? Why is it he hasn't said one word? The only one who has said any, where's Barbara Streisand, who I once had a long meeting with about Jewishness? She spoke to me about her father, Emmanuel Streisand, in very moving terms, and about why she made the movie Yentl. She hasn't said a word. Forget about even talking about the 1,200 murdered Israelis. Why don't you talk about the 400 gang-raped women? UN Women hasn't said anything. So you have Scarlett Johansson, who once spoke out for Israel, utterly silent. Natalie Portman, she's awful. She was born in Jerusalem. She has a debt of gratitude to the IDF to keeping her alive when she was born. If not for the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, she would have been murdered as a baby in Jerusalem. She's been utterly silent. Jewish celebrities are cowards. They are embarrassing. Now, Gal Gadot has put
The reason you've said the reason there, they've got to open up movies and they don't want to lose half their audience and they're making business decisions. And you know, you saw somebody brave like Juliana Margulies came out, and she got, wrong word, crucified. It's just, and this comes back to, I guess, the question is, where the fuck are young people? Where did they get the message? It's amazing. Young people today are so fucking upside down in their view of Israel and the Middle East and Hamas. I mean, to the point where they finally took it down. All of a sudden, Osama bin Laden was seen as kind of a cool guy because he was anti-US, and boy, look at some of his readings, and wasn't he ahead of his time? I mean, that level of insanity.
Young people have become idiots, and I was the rabbi at the world's most famous university for 11 years, and I actually built the second largest student organization in Oxford's 1,000-year history. It was called the Oxford University L'Chaim Society. Senator Cory Booker was my student president, Israel's ambassador to the United States. Ron Dermer, who's now the strategic affairs, he's on the five-member war cabinet. Mm-hmm. He was my student president. The former mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, was one of our most involved students. I could go on. Yeah, that was 20 years ago. Back then, students actually still had a moral conscience. Corey and I used to study Torah together. By the way, he voted for the Iran deal, and that created a lot of, don't give Iran $150 million to kill people. But anyway, but students, they really reached for something higher. There was this feeling 20 years ago, and I was there for 11 years, that beyond working for Goldman Sachs, you actually had some kind of purpose, some kind of calling that you should heed. Students today are idiots. Most of the Ivy League universities are making our students into imbeciles. Now, they may know how to start a biotech company and become billionaires. They may know how to become great lawyers at SCAD and ARPS. But if they don't know right and wrong, Like, if these students were alive during the Second World War and they were thinking, like, who's right? Is it Churchill? Is it Hitler? I'm really not sure. You'd call them bumpkins. You'd call them idiots. Now, if you don't know that Hamas, who are the Hitlers with GoPros of our time,
100%.
If you don't know that, then Harvard has made you into an imbecile. And you may be a talented imbecile. You may be a skilled imbecile. You may be someone who can create a new metal alloy or a electric car that will make you a billionaire. No offense to Elon Musk, who's been really good on Israel, by the way. But you're still an imbecile. So let's stop believing that the purpose of an education is to just get you a job at UBS in finance. The purpose of an education is to enlighten you. It's to first and foremost develop your moral sensibilities. And on that front, American universities have become the laughingstocks of the world.
So how is it? We all know the Hamas, and I've always put them in the same sentence as Nazis and ISIS, and their charter is simply kill all the Jews in the world and destroy Israel. Yet, what was the teaching? What was the genesis that you do have so many young people that can't comprehend that? What were they taught? What are they? Is it the simple the Jews are lighter skinned and wealthier than the others, and it's always an oppressor oppressed thing? What is it?
First of all, students, I learned at Oxford University. I was amazed. I don't have a college degree. I have a rabbinic degree, which is the equivalent of a college degree. I never thought it was that important because I actually took the Abraham Lincoln model, which was educate yourself. I don't need to gain information through the prism of some professor's bias. Abraham Lincoln was our greatest president. He never had any formal tutoring or education. No schooling, no university degree. He was our and the best writer and the most educated. So I read voraciously. Our students at universities, however, they don't read. It's actually remarkable. They don't read newspapers. Yeah, they probably read websites. They are remarkably uneducated. I was astonished at Oxford at how little history our students know. So the first thing is just sheer rank ignorance. If you went to Harvard graduates, if you went to MIT today and asked people what the Sykes-Picot Agreement of 1916 was, which divided the Middle East, they wouldn't know what the hell you may as well come out of Mars. If you ask them what the 1936 Peel Agreement, they have no clue. If you ask them about what year did the UN vote for Israel to become a state, they have no clue. They don't know anything. So the first is sheer rank ignorance. You could wear a Harvard sweatshirt. It doesn't mean that you have brains. That's number two. Mm-hmm. Number two, yes, we Jews, again, I blame us, because if you fail to communicate your message, you have to blame the communicator, not just the biases of the listeners.
Of course.
We Jews have failed to communicate the truth of Jewish history, which is simple. Of course, Israel is occupied. Of course it's occupied. The Jews are the indigenous people of Israel. We go back 3,300 years. That's according to the Quran. It's according to the New Testament. And in the New Testament, Arabs aren't even mentioned. They only came in the 7th century after Muhammad. So what happened? A European light-skinned occupier called the Romans came and conquered Judea, brutalized the Jews, killed millions of them, took hundreds of thousands as slaves, which is why we had Jewish communities in Europe. And the Jews always had a little remnant that stayed, but prayed three times a day to go back. When we finally got the military capacity to go back and build a state, we did. We are the indigenous people. We are not light-skinned, rich white people. By the way, I look white because my mother's Ashkenazi. My father's Faruk. My father was born in Iran. My father was never white. My father's brown. My whole family is brown. We are not white people. Go to Israel and see all the Ethiopian Jews. Mm-hmm. We're not white people. I took Al Sharpton to Israel right after 9/11. He was shocked to see these big, strong, black Jewish soldiers carrying massive machine guns. It frickin' blew him away. We're not white. But we stupidly – and by the way – the majority of Israel are Sephardic Jews. They're brown. Yeah. They're not white.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, we stupidly allow these lies. So let me repeat. Israel is occupied. The Jews were the indigenous people taken over by a light-skinned European occupier. Not the Jews after Hitler, but the Romans 2,000 years ago. Then the Arabs came in the 7th century and have stayed there since. And by the way, it was almost empty. Remember, Mark Twain traveled through all of Palestine in the 1870s, and he wrote, he didn't even see one person. The Jews came, because it was all swamps, mosquitoes, malaria. The Jews came, beginning late 19th century, beginning of the 20th century. They drained the swamps, they grew citrus, and the Arabs came because of the economic prosperity. And we want to share the land with them. There are 1.9 million Arab citizens of Israel who, not only does Israel not discriminate against its Arab citizens, almost 2 million, third of the population. But on the contrary, Israel discriminates against the Jews. The Arabs are not drafted into the army. I have two sons who, you know, made Aliyah. They moved to Israel. They're serving in this war. That sucks. Me and my wife stay up at night worried about their safety. No Arab family in Israel, citizens all, have to worry about any of their sons falling in battle because they're not drafted. Now, if you think the draft is not a serious issue, Bobby Kennedy Jr. is a very good friend of mine. His father ran against a sitting Democratic president, Lyndon Baines Johnson, in 1968 over one issue, and that issue was the draft. And that draft ripped American fabric asunder. The draft is a major issue. Jews are drafted, Arabs are not. Israel discriminates against Jews, not Arabs.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read, a podcast about the books that built our souls. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. Don't miss it. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hannah to Jhumpa Lahiri, Susie Essman, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they talk, they share. You can join us on Instagram for more behind-the-scenes content and giveaways at You Are What You Read Podcast and at Adriana Trigiani. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Corinne. We host the podcast Pop Fiction Women, and our tagline is, we're complicated.
What does that mean exactly?
To us, it just means real, three-dimensional human beings with contradictions and conflict who also happen to be women.
On this podcast, we engage in the simple but subversive act of taking women seriously. Whether it's a discussion of a classic rom-com or current hit movies written and directed by women, like Barbie or Saltburn, you can be sure we'll bring our own dynamic spin.
And we recap some of the buzziest TV shows like Succession, White Lotus, and Yellowjackets.
We also discuss book-to-TV adaptations like Daisy Jones, Tell Me Lies, Expats, Fleischman, and The Last Thing He Told Me.
We give you a seat at the table with your favorite New York Times bestselling authors in our Complicated Conversation series, and we introduce you to the next rising star in our debut discussions.
In both interview formats, we always ask the most important question of all, what's your sign?
Subscribe or follow Pop Fiction Women wherever you get podcasts.
You said you're friendly with Bobby Kennedy Jr. I find him to be a very dangerous man. Beyond his conspiracy theories, I think he could tip the election to Trump. You were very outspoken and said, no, he was not, what he said was not anti-Semitic when he came out and basically said that Ashkenazis and Chinese were less predisposed to get the disease. And you said that you had a call with him and he was profusely sorry, and you feel very strong about that.
Number one, I don't endorse candidates. In fact, I've tried my best not to become part of the partisan idiocy which characterizes America, meaning I try to find good in everyone and I try to oppose policies I can't. So let me say clearly, Joe Biden has been amazing on Israel during this war, but he's turning on Israel. Yesterday's press conference with the King of Jordan was embarrassing, frankly, when Biden started to say, and who is the King of Jordan? He's a tyrant. He's a dictator. You really want more? 3.5 million Palestinians live under this dictator named King Abdullah. But anyway, Biden's been amazing on Israel since the war began. He armed Israel. He stood with Israel. So God bless him. Trump was the best president Israel ever had. But January 6th, sorry, you run for an election, you lose, you freaking concede the damn election. Okay, because that's, you got to be a man. And you got to admit,
you know,
I lost.
Let me ask you a question about Trump.
But that doesn't mean that I forget what Trump did for Israel. He was amazing. Now,
we'll go to Trump. Finish on JFK Jr. I'm sorry.
Let me just finish with Bobby Kennedy. I love Bobby Kennedy. I don't endorse him as a candidate, but I love him. He's a very dear friend. Last week was the first Yahrzeit anniversary of the loss of my mother. She lived here in Miami, which is why I'm here.
I'm sorry. I just lost my mother a few weeks ago.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It's really, really painful. I'm sorry.
95. Yeah, 95. She had a great run. 95.
Thank God. Well, my mother died a month after dancing at her 80th birthday. She was in perfect health, and we lost her in 4 weeks.
Okay.
So Bobby was the main speaker, along with the parents of Shani Luke. Shani Luke was the most famous victim of October 7th. If you remember, this gorgeous German-Israeli woman, they stripped her naked, beheaded her, paraded her dead body, men desecrating it on the back of that pickup truck, and he spoke with them. Bobby has a real heart. He's a good man. I don't agree with him on the vaccines. I'm sextuple vaxxed. Many things I don't agree with, but I'll tell you what I like about him. He's super pro-Israel. He's not an anti-Semite. That's what I defended him from. Everyone says something kind of
stupid,
dumb at times. And he said, I said something dumb. He was sitting and by the way, he was quoting from some medical thing, because Bobby is very well read. He's super smart. He's a genius. But he admits the way he phrased it was dumb. He said that. That makes him an anti-Semite. The man has no antisemitism. And by the way, I met the whole Kennedy family at Cape Cod. Half of them are married to Jews. Joe Kennedy Sr., his grandfather, maybe was an anti-Semite.
Major anti-Semite. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but true, but he did have a son who died fighting Hitler, so I forgive Joe Kennedy. Okay. Because no matter how much you dislike the Jews, when your eldest son dies volunteering for a very dangerous mission, I'm not going to condemn you. God has punished you enough. I mean, Joe Kennedy Jr. was an American hero, and they were a Gold Star family, so I'm not going to go after them. But Bobby's a great guy. He's a great guy. I disagree with him on tons of stuff. But I'll tell you what I like about him. I think politics in America are utterly and completely corrupt. I think the reason why Mexico is a crap hole, even though it's beautiful, the people are the warmest, they have the best food. Why is it a total crap hole economically? Because of corruption. Because if you get a speeding ticket, you give the guy $10, he lets you go. You go to trial, you give the judge $1,000, he lets you go. America's becoming corrupt. The one thing I like about Bobby is that I believe he's incorruptible. You could hate his guts over vaccines, you could hate him, and I don't agree with him on the vaccines, but he will stand his ground. So that's the thing.
All right. I want to speak about corruptible. I want to ask you a Trump question, because I hear from everybody. I know him. You know, friend of Israel, great to Israel. My concern, belief about Trump is he's completely transactional. And if it was in his best interest to ever turn on Jews or turn on Israel, if it helped him and his family, he would do it. He's purely fucking transactional. I don't give a care. He doesn't give a fuck about anything. He doesn't give a fuck about Jews. Doesn't give a fuck about Israel. He gives a fuck about himself. And that's a guy who, when put in absolute power, which he would be if he ran and got another term, is very concerning to me.
I think every politician is transactional. What I learned from my relationship with Cory Booker, who was as close to me as a brother, Cory and I loved each other with the deepest love that people who are not connected by DNA can love each other. I mean, we were the closest of friends. And then 2015, Obama pressed him to vote for the Iran deal. And a guy who had taken tens of millions of dollars from the pro-Israel Jewish community, who helped him become a senator, turned on the Jews like that, just like that. Politicians and voted to give these killers. By the way, they hate America as much as they hate Jews, if not more. Remember, 2 days
that's
ago,
the way it is. By the way, that's the way I said this for messaging. Stop making it about it's not fair to the Jews and hate Jews. They're coming for fucking Western civilization.
Absolutely.
They could do it for you. If they could do it to New York, they would do it to New York. Make it about your own soul. Stop making, if you want to get people to understand Hamas and understand the problem there, it's not about Jews. It's about Western civilization that they want to annihilate.
Correct. See, and that shows why you're such a black belt in public relations. You are absolutely right.
It's a jihad. They are jihadists. It's very simple.
Correct. And they always scream death to America. But the point is this. All politicians are transactional. It could be that Donald Trump is more transactional, but all politicians are transactional. So I have not endorsed the candidate, but I'll tell you one thing that I like about Trump in this coming election. Just one thing. I believe that the number one foreign policy issue, and I know Americans have become such an isolationist, Democrats and Republicans, that we don't give a crap about foreign policy, which is stupid, because what we learned on 9/11 is these threats don't stay in Afghanistan. But the number one foreign policy issue is Iran, 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 Iran. Now, Trump will not go to war against Iran, and I don't want to see more foreign wars. I don't want to see American men and women dying in the Middle East. But I think that I buy into the Kissingerian, Nixonian madman theory. That when it comes to crazy countries like Iran, they have to believe the American president is insane, that he will nuke them if he has to, that he's crazy. Kissinger used to go to the Chinese, he used to go to the Vietnamese and say, oh my God, Nixon, he's a drunk, he drinks, he's crazy. You know, if you guys don't stop this, he's going to frick it. He's a madman. That was the madman theory. But Trump is not a theory. I think the Iranians actually believe that Trump is a madman. I think the Iranians are terrified of Trump. And by the way,
You're describing a dictator. They say in order to be a great dictator, people have to believe that people would have to, you'd have to kill your brother. You have to be that insane. That's the description of a great dictator.
No, I didn't say a fratricidal madman who would kill his brother. I said a madman in foreign policy. That was the Kissingerian. Listen, Nixon was corrupt. He had to resign. He was a totally corrupt president. But he had a hugely successful foreign policy. And Kissinger, for all of his crap, we debate whether he's a war criminal. He just died. But very successful foreign policy. And it was all based on this madman stuff. Now, the problem with Iran is that no one can contain them. Jimmy Carter was a joke weakling. Ford continued. He was after that. Even Reagan. You know, the Iranians killed 273 Marines. Reagan hightailed it out of Beirut like that. For 45 years, the Iranians have held America hostage. How long is this going to go on? They just killed three African-American heroes, soldiers, last week, Iran, and we do nothing about it. Now, do I think that Trump would strike back? A lot of people would say no, because they also attacked, Iran attacked us while Trump was president. And Trump, he killed Qasem Soleimani. That was a major strike. But the other stuff he didn't strike back about. I'm just saying that I think Iran thinks he's crazy. And Iran must be contained. Iran is freaking dangerous. And they will use a nuclear weapon against Israel, the United States, and the West. They are freaking nuts. And they are jihadis, as you said. They are Islamist ideologues. They want world domination. They never stop, and they're never going to stop until they pay such a massive price that the Iranian people reject militarism.
What history has taught us is unanswered aggression breeds more aggression. You've been very outspoken against the two-state solution. Talk to me about that.
Well, because a Palestinian state means the end of Israel. It's very simple.
Explain that.
Okay, so very simple. In 1922... A man who would become even more famous later, Winston Churchill, was colonial secretary. He felt the British owned the Hashemites who had supported the British during the First World War. So he took 80% of Palestine. It was supposed to be the Jewish state based on the Balfour Declaration. He took 80% and gave it to Jordan. Respectfully, Donnie, there's no historian that can say that that isn't the Palestinian state. 3.5 million Palestinians live there. He took 80% of it, gave it to them. The tiny little bit left, the Peel Commission said to the Jews, we'll give you this tiny little bit. We'll give most of it to the Arabs. And again, the Arabs said no. 1947, partition. Again, the Arabs said no. I can go through all of it. 1967, Israel conquered all of these, you know, lands, and which are biblical lands. Remember, 80% of the Hebrew Bible takes place in what you call, or people call, the West Bank, Judea and Samaria. David is crowned king in Hebron. The tabernacle of Shiloh was there 369 years. It wasn't in Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv is only a 100-year-old city. All of this takes place in Judea and Samaria. All of the ancient Jewish biblical roots are there. You put a Palestinian state there, and then suddenly you're back to Israel having literally a 9-kilometer width. What country can survive at 5 miles? What country can survive a 9-kilometer width? The secret to war is the vulnerability of your enemy. When the Palestinians see that Israel has been pushed back to 9 kilometers, there will be endless war in the Middle East.
So what do you do? What do you do? What do you do?
What you do is you grant the Palestinians in Judea and Samaria complete and utter autonomy, the same way that Puerto Rico has complete autonomy without federal representations. Puerto Rico has no representatives. They have no senators. They don't have federal representation, but they have American passports. So you give the Arabs, who are 1.9 million Arabs in Israel, are full citizens. The Palestinians in Judea and Samaria, for 10 years, you give them a test. You give them the same rights as American Samoa, the American Virgin Islands, and Puerto Rico. They don't vote in the Knesset federal elections, but they control all their own affairs. Israel stays completely out of it. But they don't have an army, and they don't have foreign policy, just like in Puerto Rico. And by the way, Puerto Rico has been given the opportunity to join as a state many times, and they've chosen not to because they don't want to pay federal taxes. They pay 4% taxes. We pay half of our money, right? So the Arabs also won't be taxed. That's what you do.
So I want to shift gears for a second. We know that anti-Semitism is up, I think, 500% since October 7th. You yourself and your family in Times Square were victimized. Talk to me about what happened.
Not only was I attacked many times, but there was a poster being handed out all over New York with my face that says wanted on it. And I've met with the FBI. I can reveal that. I've met with FBI counterterrorism. I debated a nutcase on the Pierce Morgan show.
Called, I saw that. That was insane. Who is that fucking guy, by the way?
I call.
He's a scholar. He's a Muslim scholar. What is he?
If he's a scholar, I'm the king of France.
I mean, the way he went after your daughter. That was horrible.
So his name is Muhammad Hijab. I call him Mojab. He is a disgrace to Islam. Islam is a great world religion. Islam brought the knowledge of God to hundreds of millions of pagans worldwide, but he's a disgrace to Islam. The day after I debated him, he actually put pictures of my two sons fighting in the IDF, Americans, in body bags, and he tweeted that. And I wrote to Pierce Morgan, whose personal email I have, and I said, you know, Pierce, come on. I eviscerated this guy in a public debate. But just because I digitally decapitated him does not mean that he has the right to threaten my children with murder the next day. And I cannot believe you're being silent on this. And to be honest, God bless Pierce Morgan. He has yet to speak out once. Now, Donnie, if you hosted a guest who the next day called for your murder or one of your guests' murder, mm-hmm. I bet you would probably say no. You are never coming on my show again.
I'm surprised. Pierce is a friend of mine. I'm surprised because he's got a good moral compass.
Ask him about this. I mean, come on. Yeah. You can't have guests who are threatening their debating partners.
So what? How did he respond? How did he respond? Or he didn't respond?
He didn't respond. But I got to tell you, his producers, I know, were disgusted. They responded. They told me they wanted to vomit with what happened, and that the show allowed it to happen.
I saw that the show was it was a disgusting display. I'm gonna let you go, my friend. It's always great talking to you, Rabbi Shmuley, a man of the people. You speak wisdom, you speak honestly, and stay safe. And I hope your sons stay safe. I know they're fighting in the IDF. Always great to talk to you, my friend.
Donnie, let me just say one thing before you go. I've followed your career. I even saw something that I bet you forgot about. I think on Amazon Prime, there's an amazing series called The Men Who Built America. Or
yes,
whatever.
Yes. History Channel. Yeah, it's on Amazon.
No,
now.
No. History, yeah. It moved it to...
Yeah, to Amazon. Right.
And your comments are so spot... How many years ago was that? A decade, more? I don't know.
Yeah, 7, 8, 9 years ago. Yeah.
But you were freaking so spot. I've watched your career. You're smart. You're insightful. You're honest. You're a proud Jew, but you're not limited. I'm not an isolationist. I'm not a ghettoized Jew. I don't want Jews just to only hang out with other Jews.
Yeah.
You're a Jewish light to the nations. I appreciate your honesty, your candor, your bravery. Thanks for having me.
Kind.
God bless you.
Stay safe, Rabbi.